Terry Project on CITR. We are holding a student conference this Saturday, November 2nd. It's our 6th annual TEDx Terry Talks. Why don't you join us? You'll hear from an accomplished mountaineer who has climbed 5 of the 7 tallest peaks, a pulsar astrophysicist studying gravitational waves, a smartphone app designer who looks at street art, and much more. Have I mentioned these are all your fellow students? Tickets are available now at terry.ubc.ca. It's just $12, and you'll get admission to a day-long conference and a lunch. Again, it's the TEDx Terry Talks, and you can find out more at terry.ubc.ca.
You are tuned in to CITR 101.9 FM, and it is 1 o'clock on a Friday afternoon here in Vancouver. You're listening to Scald's Hall. I am your host, Brian McDonald, and let's revive a tradition that, I haven't had on this show since January. Happy All Saints Day. Yes, once upon a time, I used to acknowledge random esoteric holidays as they came up. I'm not going to do that in December, I don't think, because everybody and their dog likes to go around and hunt for every tiny little festival that isn't Christmas in order to wish people that. And I used to do that. I lived in Japan for 10 years, and every time somebody said Merry Christmas to me, I would say, and have a very happy Emperor's birthday to you, because the birthday of the Emperor of Japan is December 23rd. And it just so happens that I wasn't Christian, but raised with a different religious tradition, and so I don't randomly celebrate every single thing that comes across the bow, never did, and it was really weird in a society where that wasn't really done to have everybody assume that I did. So I won't do it in December, but I will do it now. Today is All Saints Day, the day after All Hallows Eve, Eve being the night before, and that's Halloween. Tomorrow is going to be the Day of the Dead, and no, it's not a zombie movie, at least not in Mexico. It is the Mexican festival that happens on November 2nd, and it is quite the cultural event, and so for the Hispanic community that may exist up here in Vancouver, and I know that you're there because I taught a lot of you guys when I was a teacher, and have a very happy Day of the Dead. And I'm not quite certain how to say that in Spanish because of all the things that I never learned through cultural osmosis. One of them was Spanish. Learned French instead. Curse you, 49th parallel. Okay, this week we have a special guest for our show that we did an interview with a little while ago, a few days ago, Danielle Benzon. She is a local voiceover coach, local now. She's come to us from quite far away. She does a lot of work with various people, voiceover people, actors, teachers, kayak instructors, people who have to yell a lot, sports coaches. And what she does is she teaches people how to effectively use your voice. And I studied with her about a year ago now, twice, and I've taken classes that she has recommended to me. She's a very good upcoming teacher of the vocal arts, and in just a moment, we're going to listen to what she had to say to us. So don't go away.
If you wish to make an apple pie from scratch, you must first invent the universe.
The Carl Sagan Association for the Communication of Science is pleased to present screenings of Carl Sagan's Cosmos series, held twice per month on the UBC campus. Through these and other initiatives, our goal is to promote interest and engagement with the sciences on campus and in society at large. Visit ubcsagan.org for showtimes and other events.
You're tuned in to CITR 101.9 FM, and we are here with our guest, Danielle Benzon. Good morning.
Good morning.
And how are you today?
I'm doing pretty well.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I grew up in South Africa. My parents are actually Rhodesian. I lived there until I was 16, and then I immigrated to Canada. I have a background in the performing arts. I did my master's in acting in London, and...
You do something that's a little bit unusual for someone who's trained to be an actor. You're actually a voice coach. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I kind of fell into voice coaching. The training in South Africa is much more classically based than the kind of work we find in Vancouver. And it was very heavily elocution and all that stuff. So I had a grounding in that as I was growing up. But when I came to Vancouver, and I was working in the theater quite a bit here, that didn't really happen. But when I went to London, I studied at East 15 Acting School, and I actually had the privilege to work with a gentleman named Stuart Pierce. He does esoteric voice work. He does sound healing. And I got really interested in the whole process and realized that I had the advantage of having done it from quite a young age. So when I decided not to be an actor, it just seemed the next logical step. A lot of my acting friends in Vancouver were like, hey, can you teach us this voice stuff? I find it really helps with the acting work, but also I just find I really struggled with the voice work in the beginning of my acting career, and going through the struggles and finding out the work for myself has really, it's helped me so much in my journey. I want to share that with people.
How do you go about sharing that with people?
Well, I work with a vast range of clientele. I obviously started working with performers, actors, singers, voiceover artists, helping with vocal technique, just the basic stuff to look after your voice, make sure you don't hurt it, to keep it going, the stamina, and support and projection and all that stuff. Living in Vancouver, I did start very quickly to do accent reduction work. I have quite a few ESL students who want to Canadianize, I guess, naturalize their accent, which is quite fun. It's a lot more technical, but it can be really fun to watch someone grow over a session. I work with a lot of normal people who feel like there's something maybe missing in the relationship of their voice, feel like I did, like it was a key into my self-identity. A lot of us walk around with these vocal masks on all the time, and we have different voices we use for different people. And we don't always know what the core voice is, what the true authentic voice is. So I help people with that. And it goes a little bit into the more emotional, spiritual realm. But I also do a lot of very technical stuff, which is fun as well. Keeps me on my toes.
What sorts of odd habits or vocal limitations do you notice a lot of people incorporating unconsciously into their lives?
I'm noticing recently a lot of splashy S's and T's just around in people that I'm speaking to, so that the tongue is getting a little, sometimes overactive, sometimes a little lazy. It's all over the mouth, not quite as precise as it could be sometimes. A lot of kind of thing, which probably kills your radio mic. I hear a lot of people, and this isn't necessarily unique to Vancouver or anything, it's quite common. People often talk like this, and when we get really tense, we tend to talk at people. And although it's not really an uncommon habit, it is pleasant necessarily for the person talking or the person listening.
It's interesting. That reminds me a little bit of classes I had taken with Ian Raphael, who I believe you also know.
Yeah.
And I've also noticed that on your website, you list a lot of people who actually work in Canada on doing voice work. Can you tell us a little bit about the training you've had with them?
Most of the people that I've worked with in Canada, I worked with at the National Voice Intensive, which is this amazing 5-week course. I would recommend it to anyone who's serious about voice work. In May, June, it's kind of headed up by David Smuckler, but there's this amazing faculty of teachers from all over North America, not just Canada and also in the States. And they all get together and they work really hard with whichever students show up for 5 weeks, all day, almost every day, not every day, you get weekends. You learn so much and you grow so fast because it's so consistent. And that was most of my experience with the Canadian and North American coaches on there. I do still, whenever David Smuckler is in town, I try and work with him and Brad Gibson as well. There's always more to learn. That's the wonderful thing about voice. I mean, I've only been coaching for about 3 years, so I'm right at the beginning of my journey, but it's the most wonderful thing because it's the art of being human, so it's infinite. The possibilities and the growth, you can never really stop growing. There's always more to learn.
Can you tell us a little bit about what it is that you actually studied, some of the philosophical or theoretical underpinnings behind what you do?
there's a few things that I honestly have no idea where they came from. They're just random exercises from the acting teachers over the years. But the majority of my work, I'd say 70% of what I do, is based on Kristen Linklater's book, Freeing the Natural Voice, which I studied in London with Ashley Howard and Richard Ryder when I was at East 15. She's taken a lot of concepts and really distilled them in Freeing the Natural Voice. It's all about allowing yourself to be more simple and to be more free and get rid of all the tension and all that kind of stuff. So I really like, in my acting as well, I like to teach a distillation and a simplicity as opposed to putting a whole bunch of stuff on top of your performance. It's all about breaking it down to what's really important, what's really true, and what's really there. Probably the other 30% of what I do is based on Stuart Pearce's The Alchemy of Voice. He teaches an almost kind of Renaissance approach. He does sound healing. He does chakra resonance work. I only worked with him for 2 weeks, but I found it very, very enlightening. And he has an amazing way about him and the way he describes how the science and the spirituality come together in the voice.
You mentioned that what got you started offering voice workshops were people that you knew who were doing performance. Mm-hmm. Do other sorts of people come to you for voice work? And if they do, how does the work help them?
I actually only work with about 50% of actors these days. I get a lot of teachers, a lot of public speakers, a lot of people who just, as I said, ESL speakers who would like to improve their accent. So there's the accent part of it, which I kind of separate from the rest of my voice work. But with public speakers, teaching them exercises to be more confident, more grounded, and again, to find that kind of strength in their voice, that and that authenticity, that humanity, as opposed to that nerve-fueled hyperactiveness that can happen. I work with kayak instructors or soccer coaches who use their voice on a daily basis, and they're quite hard on it. And they need to find a way to make it sustainable and to not lose their voice after a long day and to project effectively. So I work with them as well.
You just mentioned that sometimes you work with people who sometimes cut themselves off. Can you talk a little bit about that? What is it that's going on in your body when you're cutting yourself off from a performance?
Well, you're cutting yourself off emotionally. We have a lot of kind of psychological blocks in our body, and the breath work is very helpful. There are other ways to get into it, but I find the breath work is extremely helpful for accessing that part of yourself very gently and very deeply. If you're scared or if you're nervous or if you just have no idea what you're doing, it can be quite difficult to access emotionality or just this kind of relaxed, authentic self that we want to be all the time, but nerves and self-judgment and all that kind of stuff gets in the way. So the breath work really helps open that channel. And we do some almost meditative work, and we do some relaxation, almost kind of yoga type work, and obviously the breath and the sound work to just marry the body and the breath and the mind all together. Because I often find that, you know, the body's doing one thing and the brain is doing something else and the emotional life is doing something else completely. So to just try and align them all together so that we're communicating more effectively.
For people with careers where you have to use your outdoor voice a lot, what are some of the pitfalls that you ought to avoid?
Probably the major psychological stumbling block is that people think of their voices coming from their throat, so that when they feel they need to be louder, they push from their throat, which causes a bunch of tension in your throat, which translates to the jaw and the tongue and the vocal cords. So instead, you want to think of your voice as coming from as low as you can, like from your belly or your pelvis if you can, which might seem a little odd to some people, but breath goes all the way down. And that's where you want to think of your voice originating, because you really want enough breath support to support that sound so that you're not really not pushing. If you have more breath, that'll solve a lot of the problems. But there's a lot more to it. There's how your primary resonators are connected and how relaxed you are. It's mostly because people are pushing from their throat.
Okay, so let's say you have somebody who might be interested in doing voice work to just improve how they communicate with others. What's a good place to go about starting that journey?
You can always come to me. There's quite a few voice teachers, I think, around Vancouver. Not a lot of us work with the general public, which I kind of think is where I'm moving to, because no one else seems to be doing it. It's a nice niche for me. I enjoy it. There are often continuing education with like SFU or Langara or UBC will do some sort of outside courses for people who are interested. I'm always happy to give information to people who call up and they have a specific query. You don't have to be studying with me to drop me an email or just say, hey, I need advice. It's always easier to direct someone when you know what their purpose is. I obviously offer workshops for beginners and one-on-one coaching. Pick up Kristen Linklater's Freeing the Natural Voice and leaf through it and see what you think. I have a blog. There's a lot of blogs out there that you can start kind of just exploring whether or not which philosophy works best for you.
Can you tell us a little bit about the upcoming events that you have planned?
I'm really excited because I'm certified to teach Meisner technique, and I'm finally putting together a workshop that marries the voice work and the Meisner technique in November, from November 18th to 29th. It's a full-time workshop, Monday to Friday. I'm just so excited because the Meisner work is the closest I've gotten to an approach that mirrors the voice approach. It's all about simplicity. It's about connecting and being present and really listening to your partner, and it works really well with the vocal work. I've been wanting to put this on for a while because the Meisner labs that I have been to before, you get actors from all over with different backgrounds and training, and you can really tell the ones who don't have the vocal support there, the ones that don't have the technique, you can really hurt yourself because the Meisner work takes you through your full emotional range, and as you get further into it, you go through your extreme emotional range. And if you don't know how to handle that vocally, you can lose your voice. So I'm really excited to put these two together, and I've got all these parallels. I'm really excited for that. I think the Meisner work is, it's still difficult, but you can really drop into the process. And once you've kind of got that focus going, it's much more simple than some of the other acting approaches out there. Not that any one is better than the other, but it's definitely my favorite.
What is the Meisner technique?
It's based on the work of Sanford Meisner. There's quite a few books on it out there. Larry Silverberg writes a wonderful workshop book series. He writes the book so that you can actually use the books in your practice. It's almost the same approach that Kristen Linklater has to voice about getting rid of all the extra stuff and really coming down to the core and being truthful and present. And that's all the Meisner work is designed. It's a very specific series of exercises that take you through the journey and how to build the foundation of what you need to do to be able to truly be present and just let all of the other stuff go. Obviously, there's a whole other section of preparation that you need to do before you get on stage. But once you're on stage, there's this freedom that you have, this lack of clutter in your mind. You're truly present and you're able to respond truthfully to what's happening in the moment. It feels very liberating to me, and it's a similar feeling to what I do with the voice work. I don't have a better way of explaining it, but read Larry's book. It's really good.
Reminds me a little bit of the formless form, the philosophy that Bruce Lee put behind his martial arts.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that he saw people clinging to form and it was hindering them. He tried to devise a system of, in this case, fighting, where you would just be in the moment and react to what was really going on rather than what your katas were telling you to do from your practice.
Absolutely. It's exactly like that. The trap as actors is to get so stuck in, you know, we're often really neurotic and we want to put all this extra stuff on it and we want to get caught in our head and all the self-talk and the I should be doing this and I should be doing that. And all of that takes you away from beautiful human connection that you should be having with your scene partner or with your audience. So yeah, absolutely.
Do you have any final thoughts for us?
I want to encourage people to have a curiosity when they approach working with themselves, however it is, if it's meditation or yoga, or voice work, or they're exploring performance. Self-judgment doesn't really ever help, and everything that you have is worth something. Be curious and gentle with yourself, and totally check out my website, livingvoice.ca. I want to be in a world where people are being more curious and more loving about their art and their life, so go out, do that.
And just as a footnote to that, we here at CITR 101.9 FM in Skults Hall, we will share on our social media feeds. We have a Facebook feed for the show, a Twitter feed for the show. We will share links to Danielle's website where you can go and check out what she's doing. I know that she updates her workshop schedule. You'll find an up-to-date workshop schedule there. You'll find some of the authors that she's talked about. I believe their names will be on there too.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the other people with whom she has worked. And so that's all there. Thank you very much for your time today, Danielle.
Thank you so much, Brian. This was an absolute pleasure.
And you're listening to Skald's Hole here at CITR 101.9 FM.
SpongeBob! You're wasting me precious carbon dioxide! I'm pumping it into the atmosphere, boy! Thanks to global warming, the temperature will soon go through the roof, and then we'll have an endless summer.
Why do you want an endless summer, Mr. Krabs?
So I can open me latest money-making venture, the Krusty Pool!
The endless summer does sound fun.
And profitable.
Fun and profitable! Big business does it again!
Unfortunately, for those of us who aren't talking sponges, climate change isn't quite as fun. Luckily, there are many easy ways for students to conserve energy.
If chargers for cell phones, cameras, and laptops are left plugged in, they continue to draw electricity even when not connected to the device. This phantom load can be avoided by unplugging electronics and chargers after use. A more convenient option is to hook electronics up to a power bar, which can be switched off after use.
For more energy-saving tips, go to www.bchydro.com. This message brought to you by BC Hydro and CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
And welcome back to us here at CITR 101.9 FM, and you're listening to Skald's Hole. Just to recap, we just heard our interview with Danielle Benson, and if you go to her website, which is www.livingvoice, all one word, all small characters, .ca, you will find event schedules, you will find information about her, you will find a lot of stuff. And just as a recap, this month she's having events, she's having a One Day Voice Foundation on November 10th, which is a week from Sunday. From the 15th to the 17th, which would be the next weekend, Friday to Sunday the next weekend, she's having an Unleash Your Voice workshop, which is something I took about a year ago. And if you are any sort of professional that uses your voice, you might want to consider it. I believe in our class we had me. I was a teacher at an education major in graduate school. I still am at the time. And we had a Russian pilot. We had a couple of in front of the camera actors. We had a theater actor. So there's a lot of people, and it wasn't all just actors. There was a lot of people there. So you might want to consider that. And her Mesner Voice Intensive Workshop will run November 18th to the 29th, from Monday to Friday. And that's what's. And then she has another Voice Technique Weekend, November 29th to December 1st. I just thought I would put that out there. So if you are looking to improve your ability to communicate over the weekends this month, you are blessed with choices. She's got something available every weekend except for this coming weekend. So there you go. Now, moving on. This week, we are going to continue our suspense series. So sit back, relax, and in just a moment, enjoy.
What rolls downstairs from owner in pairs, rolls over your neighbor's dog? What's great for a snack and fits on your back? It's long, long, long. It's long, long. It's big, it's heavy, it's wood. It's long, long. It's better than bad, it's good. Everyone wants a long. You're gonna love it long. Come on and get your long. Everyone needs a long.
Log from Blammo. Tonight, we take pleasure in bringing you Suspense, a weekly anthology of notable melodramas from stage and screen, fiction and radio, presented each week to bring you to the edge of your chair, to keep you in suspense.
May 8th, 1889. What a lovely day. I have spent all the morning lying on the grass in front of my house, under the enormous plantain tree which shelters the whole of it. From my windows I can see the Seine, which flows by the side of my garden and almost through my grounds. The great and wide Seine, which is covered with boats passing to and fro. On the left lies Rouen, populous Rouen, with its blue roofs massed under pointed Gothic towers. Innumerable are they, all dominated by the spire of the cathedral, full of bells which sound through the blue air on fine mornings, sending their sweet and distant iron clang to me. What a wonderful morning. I was almost sorry when Marie, my housemaid, interrupted me.
Your luncheon is ready, monsieur.
Oh, thank you, Marie. But it seems almost a pity to go inside the house. Isn't it a perfect day, Marie?
Oh, yes, monsieur. And the view, oh, is beyond compare. I do so love to watch the boats go by on the Seine.
Really? Oh, so do I. Please, sit a moment and join me.
Oh, thank you, monsieur.
Do you know about the different types of vessels, Marie?
No, monsieur, I'm not well versed in such things.
Ah, well, see, these two? The ones with the red flags, these are English schooners. And there, that magnificent white three-master. It's being drawn by a steam tug no bigger than a fly.
Yes, monsieur, it's magnifique. So white, so perfectly clean and shining.
Indeed it is. And see the flag? That ship, it's Brazilian. Just think of the long voyage it has had from South America to pass by our gate.
Oh, you love this place very much, don't you, monsieur?
Yes, I truly do, Marie. This place, the home in which I grew up, I love it so. I'm attached to it by the deep roots, profound and delicate, which attach a man to the soil on which his ancestors were born and died. I must sound like a poet.
What you sound like, monsieur, is someone whose luncheon will get cold if he doesn't come in and eat.
All right, Marie. I'll come in. May 20th. For some reason, I've had a slight feverish attack the last few days, and I feel low-spirited and ill. I have continually a horrible feeling of impending danger, of apprehension of some coming misfortune or approaching death. I've never experienced anything like this before. And my dreams have become most troubling.
What? Who is there?
Monsieur, it's Marie.
No, oh, just a moment. Yes?
Are you all right? You were screaming and calling out. You waked the servants.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was having a nightmare.
A nightmare, monsieur?
Yes, a nightmare. Marie, if you dreamed that someone was looking at you and touching you and taking your neck in his hands and squeezing it with all his might in order to strangle you, don't you think you would cry out too?
Oh, yes, monsieur. I'm sure I should.
Yes, of course you would. So. But I do apologize. Please tell the servants that I shall try to be more quiet.
Yes, monsieur. So your visit to the doctor was of no help?
No. He examined me. He told me that while my pulse is rapid and my eyes are slightly dilated, I am otherwise in splendid health. When I asked him why, when evening comes on, a feeling of oppression seizes me, as if night concealed something horrible. The doctor claimed that it was nothing more than indigestion. So he prescribed a bromide of potassium and a course of cold shower baths daily.
Indigestion? Shower baths? Well, that is ridiculous. Oh, I beg your pardon, monsieur. Perhaps I speak out of turn.
No need to apologize, Marie. In truth, I do not believe it myself. Yesterday, when I was walking in the forest of Rumer, it suddenly seemed as if I was being followed, that someone was walking at my heels, close, quite close to me. He was near enough to touch me. And yet, when I turned around, I saw nothing. Nothing behind me but the path between the tall trees, just horribly empty. Can that be explained by indigestion?
Oh, no, monsieur, I do not think so.
Nor do I. But what rational explanation is there? Am I merely afflicted with some manner of nervous condition? Or are there things in this world, sinister shadows that remain hidden to us? How profound the mystery of the invisible is. We cannot fathom it with our miserable senses. Our eyes are unable to perceive what is either too small or too great, too near or too far from us. We can see neither the inhabitants of a star nor a drop of water. First a poet and now a philosopher.
And always a thoughtful and gracious gentleman, monsieur.
Thank you, Marie. And thank you for checking on me. But please, go back to bed.
Very well, monsieur. Can I get you anything before I go?
No, it's all right. I'll just have a glass of water and try to go back to sleep. Marie, look. My water carafe.
Your water carafe?
Yes. It was full. I know it was full when I went to bed.
Yes, monsieur, I filled it last night.
But now it's empty. I haven't touched, and yet it's empty.
But how can that be?
Someone has been in this room. Someone or something drank that water.
Oh, I do not know who could have, monsieur. Neither I nor any of the other servants have entered here. Perhaps you drank the water in your sleep.
Yes. I must have drank it myself, of course. That is it.
Shall I get you some more?
No. No, it's all right. I'll be fine. Good night, Marie.
Good night, monsieur.
June 15th. My state has grown worse. Much worse. The bromide and the shower baths have had no effect whatsoever. As evening comes on, an incomprehensible feeling of disquietude seizes me. I try to read, but I do not understand the words, and can scarcely distinguish the letters. So I walk the floors of my drawing room, oppressed by confused and irresistible fears. A fear of sleep, and a fear of my bed. But eventually, sleep comes. And with it a recurring nightmare that somebody is strangling the life from me. I struggle, bound by that terrible powerlessness which paralyzes us in our dreams. I try to cry out, to move, to turn over and throw off this being which is suffocating me, but I cannot. So, I have decided to leave first thing in the morning, in the hopes that a change of environment will assuage my condition.
Ah, there you are. And you're just in time. Part of the reason I was so insistent that you attend this evening is that we have a special guest, Dr. Perrin, the specialist in nervous diseases and the extraordinary manifestations produced by hypnotism and suggestion.
You think that perhaps my own condition could be related?
Perhaps, cousin. At any rate, it may give you food for thought. Oh, come. He's about to start.
We are on the point of discovering one of the most important secrets of nature, or at least one of its most important secrets on this earth. For assuredly, there are some in the stars of a different measure of importance, eh? Ever since man has been able to express and write down his thoughts, he has felt himself close to a mystery which is impenetrable to his coarse and imperfect senses. and he has endeavored to supplement these senses by the efforts of his intellect. As long as that intellect remained in its elementary stage, this intercourse with invisible spirits led to popular belief in the supernatural. But, for more than a century now, men seem to have had a presentiment of something new. Mesmer and some others have put us on an unexpected track, and within the last 2 or 3 years especially, we have arrived at results really surprising. Madame Sable, would you like me to try and send you to sleep?
Yes, certainly.
Very well. You must let your mind go completely blank and look fixedly into my eyes. Now, you are going to sleep. 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 You see? Her eyes are becoming heavier with my instruction. Sleep. 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 There. Now she is asleep. Monsieur, if you would please go behind her.
But of course.
See this? Nothing more than a visiting card. I place it in Madame Sable's hands. This is a looking glass. What do you see in it?
I see my cousin.
What is he doing?
He's twisting his mustache.
Oh, very good. Now, when you awaken, you will take your cousin aside and ask him to lend you 5,000 francs, which your husband asks of you for his upcoming journey. It is a life or death matter. You must have the money. Now, awaken.
What? Cousin, I must speak with you in private of a matter most urgent.
Yes, but of course.
Dear guests, please excuse us for just a moment. My dear cousin, I must ask a great favor of you.
What is it, cousin?
I do not like to tell you, and yet I must. I am in absolute want of 5,000 francs.
What? You?
Oui. My husband, who has asked me to procure them for him.
Your husband is colonel of the 76th Chasseurs, and a very wealthy man. Has he not 5,000 francs at his disposal? Come, think. Are you sure that he commissioned you to ask me for them?
Yes. Yes, I am quite sure of it.
He has written to you?
I do not know.
So your husband runs into debt?
I do not know. But please, for the love of God, I must have the francs.
Do you remember what took place just a few minutes ago? How Dr. Parent sent you to sleep?
Yes.
When you were asleep, he ordered you to borrow 5,000 francs from me. And at this moment, you are obeying his suggestion.
But it is my husband who wants them.
Cousin, this is just hypnotic suggestion.
No, my husband. I know he must be in dire need of those francs. I beseech you, dear cousin.
Dr. Perron, there you are. You must do something.
Cousin, please. The francs.
I will put her to sleep and remove the suggestion. Afterwards, all will be as it was before.
Please, do so at once. This is diabolical.
Actually, this demonstration was for your benefit. Madame Sable mentioned your condition to me.
Cousin!
This is nothing like what afflicts me.
But Madame Sable said that...
Whatever haunts my nights and seeks to take control of me, it is not human.
July 23rd. I am doomed. Or, perhaps, mad. For I feel my will being overwhelmed bit by bit so that I am no longer my own master.
Certainly this is the way my poor cousin felt, possessed and swayed under the power of a parasitic and ruling soul. But what plagues me is no mere hypnotic suggestion. No, it is something not of this world, something infinitely insidious and patient. And its effect upon me, picture to yourself a sleeping man who is being murdered, who wakes up with a knife in his chest, a gurgling in his throat, is covered with blood, can no longer breathe, is going to die and does not understand anything about it at all. That sleeping man is me. But who is this murderer? This invisible being that rules me, this unknowable being, this rover of a supernatural race. Yes, come in.
Monsieur, you haven't eaten all day. So I've brought you some supper. Please have something.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Marie. Yeah, just put it on the table, please.
Yes, monsieur. Unknown Inhabitants of the Ancient and Modern World by Dr. Herman Aristaus.
I have been doing certain researches. Looking for possible explanations for this malady which plagues me. Marie, I am convinced that this is no psychological terror, but an actual physical being.
Monsieur?
I have just read the following in the Revue des Mondes Scientifiques. A curious piece of news comes to us from Rio de Janeiro. An epidemic of madness, which may be compared to that contagious madness which attacks the people of Europe in the Middle Ages. It is at this moment raging in the province of San Paolo. The frightened inhabitants are leaving their houses, deserting their villages, abandoning their land, saying that they are pursued, possessed, governed, like human cattle by invisible beings, a species of vampire which feeds on their life while they are asleep.
I do not understand, monsieur.
This epidemic, what the villagers are fleeing from, it sounds exactly like the unseen devil that plagues me.
But these events, they've transpired in Brazil an ocean away. How could they be related? How could one of those invisible beings come to inhabit this house?
Do you remember that day in May, when we were sitting on the grass out front, watching the boats on the Seine? The day we saw that magnificent three-master, so white and bright.
Yes, I remember.
That three-master came from Brazil. One of those invisible beings, he was on board of her, and he saw me. And he saw this house, which is also a bright white. And he sprang from the ship onto the land. He came here.
Monsieur, I suppose it is possible. That the three-master came from Brazil is quite a coincidence, but are you quite certain that there is no other explanation?
What is reported as happening to the villagers in Brazil is exactly what I have been suffering. Just last night, I felt somebody leaning on me, sucking my life from me like a vampire. Then he got up, apparently satiated, and in the morning I woke up so beaten and crushed and annihilated that I could not move.
Oh, my poor monsieur. Is there anything I can do?
Thank you, Marie, but no. No, I am not certain that there is anything that anyone can do.
Perhaps if we consult your doctor.
What? So he can prescribe more bromides and another course of shower baths? No. No, he would be of no help.
Then what of Dr. Parent, whom your cousin Madame Sable introduced to you?
Marie, I fear that what I am dealing with is beyond the ken of any man.
Then what is there to do, monsieur?
I do not know. When one is attacked by certain maladies, the springs of our physical being seem broken. I am experiencing the same in my moral being, in a strange and distressing manner. I have no longer any strength, any courage, any self-control. I have no power left to will anything. But someone does it for me, and I obey.
Monsieur, please forgive me, but you must have help of some sort. This talk of invisible beings that control the will of men, it is madness.
Madness? Why is it madness? The wind is the strongest force in nature. It blows down men and buildings. It uproots trees, raises the sea into mountains of water. It kills. It whistles. It sighs. It roars. Yet, have you ever seen it? Can it be seen? It exists, nonetheless.
But the wind is a natural phenomenon, a regular feature of this world. These invisible beings of which you speak, oh, until now they have never been heard of anywhere on Earth.
Perhaps they are not even of this Earth. Each night we see countless numbers of stars in the sky. Who inhabits those worlds? What forms, what living beings are out there? What do they know and see that we do not? Will they someday traverse space to appear on our Earth and conquer it?
Invisible beings. Other worlds. Oh, this is sheer speculation, monsieur, without any manner of proof. There are other explanations for your symptoms. There must be.
No. I know what it is that stalks my very soul.
Whatever it is, you must get away from here. Before it is too late.
I cannot. It will not let me.
Oh, then you are lost. But I will be here with you, nonetheless. Good night, monsieur.
He whom disquieted priests exorcised, whom sorcerers evoked on dark nights, whom we transient masters of the world imagined in the forms of gnomes, spirits, genii, fairies, and familiar spirits. He must have a name. What is his name? What's that? I can hear him shouting it out in the distance as he seeks me out. His name? It is Zerola. That's it. He is Zerola. August 1st. Finally, I know the truth. How can I help but know? It's obvious. The rule of man is over. And he has come. Yes. Zerola. He haunts me. He is within me. He is taking over my soul. I must kill him. But how? How? Perhaps the next time I feel him close, I will have the strength of desperation to strangle him, to crush him, to tear him to pieces. But what if mere human fortitude is to no avail? No. I must have a plan.
Monsieur?
Yes, what is it?
I've paid the workman, just as you instructed.
Fine. Fine, thank you, Marie.
An iron door. And half-inch iron shutters?
Yes. What of them?
They are to keep this invisible creature out?
They are not to keep him out. I want to keep him in.
Monsieur?
Never mind, Marie. Good night.
Monsieur, please. Let me call the doctor. Perhaps he can help.
I said good night.
Yes, monsieur. Good night.
Yes, to keep him in. Tonight he'll come, and I will be ready for him. He's here. I can feel it. At last he's here. But I don't want to alarm him. I will casually close the iron shutters, as if I am preparing for bed. And now I'll start to close the iron door as if I'm shutting myself in for the night. But instead of shutting myself in, I'll shut him in. Yes! It's done! He's locked inside this room and cannot escape. And now to destroy him. Oh, this lantern, yes, fire! Fire will dispose of him. The house is as dry as tinder. It won't take long. The flames! They're reaching the ceiling already. I better get out before I burn myself up, too. I can watch from here. A tongue of flame licking out from the top window. And another. Oh, look at it burn. Oh, my house. My beautiful house. No. It is more beautiful now that it is in flames, because he is inside. And he will burn too. He'll burn and then I will be free. Free of the Horla.
Fire. The whole house is on fire.
That's the housemaid, Marie.
The servants are trapped.
We have to do something.
The roof has fallen in. The roof has fallen in.
Help me.
It is over. It is the end for him. He is dead. Or is he dead? Perhaps time alone has power over that invisible and redoubtable being. No. A spirit would never fear premature destruction. Only we fear it. For all of our human terrors spring from it. But him? No. No, he still lives. And after us, who can die any day by any accident, will come the Horla, who can die only at his own proper hour because he has touched the limits of his existence. No, he's not dead. But what can I do? What can I do? There's only one thing I can do. I can destroy myself. Yes. I must destroy myself. I must destroy myself. I must destroy myself.
Get a straitjacket on him quickly.
Let me go. No, let me go. Don't you understand? I must destroy myself. Let me go!
So ends The Horla, by John C. Alzadek and Dana Perry Hayes. Tonight's story of Suspense. Suspense is produced by Blue Hours Productions. Tonight's radio drama was adapted by John C. Alzadek and Dana Perry Hayes from the short story by Guy de Maupassant. Christopher Duva was Monsieur. Elizabeth Grayson was Marie. Dana Perry Hayes was Madame Sable. And Damon Krall was Dr. Parent. I'm Damon Krall. Next week at this time, tune in again for another study in Suspense.
Right here on News 101.
Right here on News 101.
What motivated you to become a candidate in the provincial election?
The media portrayal of last week's protest that resulted in polarizing images of black-clad activists taking to the streets.
He was just explaining to us the reason why they wanted to show this film on campus.
The official stance is that we are for the Olympics.
News 101 reporter Brad Pepping was there.
By discriminating against homeless people in Vancouver, there's a disproportionate impact on Aboriginal people as well as people with disabilities.
I was pretty outraged. I mean, it is outrageous.
In-depth coverage from an alternative perspective.
News 101 is Vancouver's only live, volunteer-produced student and community newscast, bringing you local, national, and international news from an alternative perspective. Tune in Mondays and Fridays at 5 p.m. right here on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. Live streaming and podcasts are available online at citr.ca.
And welcome back to us live here at CITR 101.9 FM. And it is a couple of minutes before 2 o'clock on a Friday afternoon here in ever-cloudy Vancouver. And once again, have a happy All Saints Day. And should you have the opportunity to do so, please have a very happy Day of the Dead tomorrow. And if you can't, then you can watch zombie movies like everybody else. Except me, I don't watch zombie movies that often. Well, anyway, coming up in just a moment, we will have Radio Zero with Tyler and Cam. And beyond that, have a good weekend from all of us here at CITR 101.9 FM.
Music, drumming, dance, transformation, an expression of the heart through voice, the heart opening to love, channeling of intention, kirtan community.